Hello, thank you for joining. I'm Jacqueline Becker. I'm part of the Long COVID Education Engagement and Care Management Project sponsored by the Council of Medical Specialty Societies. I'm a clinical neuropsychologist and a health services researcher, and I'm here today to talk about cognitive dysfunction and long COVID. And I'm proud to be a part of this expert panel. So, when people with long COVID present with cognitive symptoms, they tend to report forgetfulness, trouble concentrating, trouble finding words, feeling confused or dazed, or just general brain fog. And while some of these symptoms may be nonspecific, it's important to recognize that these are real, measurable symptoms, and that for many people, these changes are new and distressing, especially if they were higher functioning before COVID. These symptoms can also be disabling and prevent them from returning to work or resuming their normal lives. With respect to prevalence, research shows a wide range depending on the measures used, but the estimate is currently that about 22 to 54% of people with long COVID report cognitive difficulties. And again, this variability depends on the population studied, the criteria used, and how cognition is measured. But the key point is that cognitive impairment in long COVID is highly prevalent and is considered one of the most commonly reported symptoms. From a neuropsychological standpoint, the most consistent objective findings are deficits in attention, processing speed, and executive functioning, which includes things like planning, multitasking, cognitive flexibility, problem solving, and organizing. Impairment on objective tests is generally defined as performance that is 1 to 1.5 standard deviations below the normative mean. And in primary care, full neuropsychological batteries are unlikely to be feasible, whereas cognitive screeners like the Montreal Cognitive Assessment or MoCA or the Mini Mental Status Exam are more commonly administered. However, it's important to consider that these screeners were not designed to detect the subtle deficits, especially in young and high-functioning individuals, so they may still be above their supposed cutoffs, even in the face of true impairment. And so for this reason, patient-reported outcome tools like the PROMIS and the NeuroQoL can be very helpful as they can give a window into how patients perceive their symptoms over time, which is especially useful for monitoring recovery or decline. Currently, there's no single FDA-approved treatment for cognitive impairment in long COVID, but there are several strategies being studied in clinical trials and in practice. Several off-label medications and supplements have become commonplace, including low-dose naltrexone, amantadine, Intuniv plus NAC, which was FDA approved to treat ADHD, acetyl L-carnitine, and modafinil. Pharmaceuticals aside, cognitive rehabilitation has also been shown to be potentially beneficial, especially programs that target executive functioning like goal management training and others that integrate fatigue management strategies. There are also several ongoing trials of transcranial brain stimulation as a potential intervention as well. In addition to those treatments mentioned, there are many other ways you can support your patients as well, such as by providing compensatory strategies and lifestyle modifications. For example, by emphasizing pacing and energy conservation theories to help them avoid the sort of push-crash cycle and prevent cognitive fatigue. You can recommend compensatory tools as well, like planners, reminders, or external systems to help them compensate for cognitive difficulties. And for general brain health, it's always important to emphasize a healthy diet and good sleep hygiene to maximize restorative rest. And finally, many patients may be applying for disability or seeking school or workplace accommodations. So, since long COVID is considered a disability under the ADA, you can make recommendations like flexible scheduling, reduced workload, or additional time for tasks, which can make a meaningful difference in a person's ability to return to work. And so, despite all that we have covered here, whenever feasible, a referral to neuropsychology is still recommended. Neuropsychologists can help rule out other contributing factors, such as underlying neurologic conditions and other conditions that can cause cognitive dysfunction. They can also provide individualized treatment recommendations and help to establish a baseline for tracking recovery or progression of symptoms over time. And finally, just for broader consideration, we must remember that cognitive impairment in long COVID is often multifactorial and that there may be other contributors to consider within the broader context of long COVID, including fatigue and sleep disturbances, mood such as depression, anxiety, mast cell activation syndrome, dysautonomia, or postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, hypothyroidism or other endocrine issues, autoimmune conditions, and side effects of medications. So evaluation should always be holistic, and other possible contributors should be managed simultaneously. So to summarize, cognitive impairment after COVID is common, distressing, and real. Screening tools like the MoCA are helpful but limited. Consider also patient-reported measures. Management includes off-label medications, rehabilitation, fatigue management, and accommodations, and always keep an eye out for other contributors. Thank you for your attention. Additional resources are available at cmss.org.